Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Ohio State had a bit of a roller coaster ride of a regular season, finishing with a 10-2 record, beating Big Ten rivals Penn State, Michigan State, and Michigan along the way. On Saturday, the Bucks take on undefeated Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game. A win could propel OSU to a berth in the college football playoff, despite those two ugly losses against Oklahoma and, ouch, Iowa. And then there's Alabama. Joining us is Columbus Dispatch OSU football reporter Bill Rabinowitz. Welcome back, Bill.
Nice to be with you, Ann.
Also by phone is USA Today national college football writer Dan Wolkin. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Hey, good morning.
So let's start with Alabama after the Crimson Tide fell to Auburn on Saturday. You wrote that Alabama doesn't deserve a pass to the playoff. Why not?
Well, they didn't win their conference. They didn't win their division at 11-1. They have a good record, but the problem with Alabama this year is that they just don't have a lot of what I think the selection committee would call high-impact victories. They beat LSU earlier this year, and that's a nice victory over a top 25 team. But Mississippi State, 8-4, is their second best victory, and that's not really all that exciting. So I just don't really think that at the end of the day, the selection committee is going to have a lot of regard for Alabama's resume. What they're going to need is eye test, and I'm not sure Alabama passes on the eye test either right now.
The what test?
The eye test.
Eye test. Okay.
It's sort of a term that you kind of use in football to say, all right, we watch this team play, we just think they're really good. They have a dominant look about them. And Alabama usually passes the eye test.
Uh-huh.
This year, this month, the way they've played, they just haven't really seemed as dominant maybe as in years past.
Okay, so how important is the Big Ten championship then to Ohio State? They're kind of filling in those gaps that Alabama has. They're number 8 in the latest playoff rankings announced, I guess, just the last night or day before last. Well, Alabama is number 5 with Wisconsin at number 4. How big of a deal is that?
Yeah, the conference commissioners created this playoff, and they did it in a way where they wanted the conference championships to be of high value. So there's 5 power conferences and there's 4 spots. So every year, one of the conference champions, or maybe more, is going to get left off. And I think the idea behind it was reward those conference championships. But if there's a team that's clearly in the top 4 in the country that is not a conference champion, then put them in there. For Ohio State, winning that conference championship, they have to, but that could be the tiebreaker, or that could be the thing that vaults them past Alabama. I'm not sure that it will. There's a little bit of a secret sauce element to the way they evaluate all of this, and Ohio State has got some big negatives, including that really bad loss to Iowa. So how that all gets weighed in the committee room, we won't know until Ohio State A wins the game Saturday, and then how the committee looks at it on Sunday. But that's what is part of the intrigue going into the weekend.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the Buckeyes today and their chances for a berth in the playoffs. They've got the Big Ten championship game against undefeated Wisconsin on Saturday. That's as my guest Dan Wolkin of USA Today just said, that's a must win. Also with us, Bill Rabinowitz, Ohio State football beat writer for the Columbus Dispatch. Let's talk about this selection committee for a lot of people. It's only been around for like 4 years, right, Bill?
Right. Yeah, so, 2014 was the first year.
Right. And who are they, and who died and elected them god of the playoff selection?
Well, they used to be kind of a computer system with the old BCS, those heavily related with computers, and they decided they wanted to have human beings, experts, their athletic directors, university presidents. There's even a writer, a former sports writer. Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
they tried to, Condoleezza Rice was on it. I mean, they try to have a cross section of people.
Really?
Yeah, she knows her football. She knows her football. So they get in a room down in Texas and they hash it out. They start each week from scratch. Gene Smith is on the committee now.
So every week throughout the season?
Not throughout. It started, I think, in late October.
Okay.
So they have to have a body of work, and then they really get, start to crunch the, not the numbers, but they really start to evaluate, and they meet every week and they come up with who they think are the best teams, and they do it from scratch. So it's not like, okay, this team was four last week, so we're going to start them at four this week. They just start from scratch each week. And Gene Smith is on the committee. Now, he recuses himself by the rule whenever Ohio State's being discussed.
Huh. That sounds kind of messy. Dan Wolkin, how do these people get on this selection committee? Do they get paid? Is it a big deal?
Well, it's not a paid position. I think a lot of them consider it an honor. Most of the people on there have been involved in college football in some capacity throughout their life. You've got the five athletic directors who represent each of the power conferences. So I think they do that to, kind of have a system where they're accountable to each other. You know, the people, the stakeholders in the system, have some accountability to their colleagues when they make these decisions. They've got some ex-coaches on there that they like to have, just to kind of break down the football X and O expertise of it.
Uh-huh.
Look, it's probably, at the end of the day, it's probably a little bit overwrought and overdone in terms of, how much detail that goes into it. This isn't rocket science. You're just picking football teams. But the truth is that they need a system where they have consistency, week to week in terms of their process. And, I've been down there. They do a mock selection for the media every year. And you go through sort of a similar process to the committee. And you do get a sense that they have a lot of information available and they have a lot of process in terms of the voting, that sort of helps keep them in line and gets them looking at least at the right information.
Is it very secretive?
Yeah, they go into this room and they spend a couple days and, they're not allowed to, talk about it or anything like that. They have a chairman who's the spokesperson for the committee. It's a secret ballot. It's a really interesting setup. They've got like these laptop computers and they do like several rounds of voting. You vote on this computer and then it tabulates it all and puts it up there on the screen when it's done. And it's a cool little system. Basically the committee kind of wants to have one voice. They don't want people kind of going out there and saying, well, I voted for this team and not that team. What they talk about, usually they have talking points in anticipation of questions they may get asked. And it's the chairman's job to every week go on ESPN and then a conference call with the media later and talk about why they did what they did.
But you said there's sort of a secret sauce.
Yeah, it's the conference championships. We know that they matter and we know that they're emphasized, but we don't know what they count for at the end. If Ohio State, for instance, were to move up from 8 to 4, we would know that it's because they won the conference championship. And how heavily that gets weighed in the discussion versus other attributes a team has, both positive and negative, you don't really know. You just don't know.
Bill Rabinowitz, they break down each game, right? They look at it. They don't just say, oh, it was a win. They say, when they slaughtered Michigan State, I am still bleeding green profusely from that. When they slaughtered Michigan State, it wasn't just a win. It was a catastrophe for Michigan State.
Yes, it does matter. Style points do matter. Now, does it matter whether it's 40-0 versus 50-0? I don't think so.
Okay.
But they kind of used the phrase game control. Did that team dominate the other team?
Yeah.
And so, yes, it does matter. And for Ohio State this weekend, it certainly matters. If they beat Wisconsin 21-20 versus, they don't have to beat them 59-0, which propelled them into the playoffs 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But if it's a convincing win, that certainly helps Ohio State's cause.
Do they look at potentially bad calls? Some people are talking about bad calls in, Buckeye land for weeks sometimes.
I guess they would. I can't imagine that would keep a team out of the playoff, one bad call, but unless it was just egregious and it cost them a game, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Dan Wolkin, so the conference championship, it matters, kind of depends on, like everything else, on how well they play, if they win, how well they win?
Well, style points matter somewhat. How a team plays. I think you can go back to 2014, the first year of the playoff, and Ohio State beating Wisconsin, I think the final score was like 52-0 or something like that. As dominant as they were that day, I think that convinced the committee to put them in ahead of TCU or Baylor that year. So that kind of impression in a big game, like a championship, like the ones we're going to see Saturday, there's no question that that will be taken heavily into account.
But it's not necessarily conversely if Wisconsin wins, they have a good chance, Bill Rabinowitz?
If Wisconsin wins, they're in. They're undefeated.
In. Okay.
They're the only Power 5 team that's
but
undefeated.
But their schedule's been kind of people have a jaundiced view of the schedule.
Right. They play in the Big Ten West, which is clearly the weaker of the two divisions in the Big Ten. They've not really played anyone good. They played BYU early in the year, thinking when they scheduled it that BYU would be a good program, and they've been awful this year. So the best team they've beaten is probably Michigan, maybe Northwestern. So it's, you know, they haven't beaten a team that's ranked right now. So there's still a lot of questions about Wisconsin. But if they beat Ohio State as an undefeated team, that's not even an issue.
So how did, you know, Dan Wilkin, how did Ohio State and Wisconsin compare this weekend?
I think a lot of people are really interested to see the game. Ohio State is the favorite in terms of the betting line. But, you know, I think Wisconsin's probably been underestimated a little bit all year. People have questioned the competition they've played. But defensively, at least from a numbers standpoint, and, you know, their speed on defense, they seem like an elite type of team. I think there's a little bit of a ceiling in terms of their talent level. They don't have as much, you know, physical pure talent as Ohio State, guys who are going to be playing in the NFL or anything like that. But from a consistency standpoint, Ohio State's not really a team that you've been able to trust this year. You don't know what kind of effort you're going to get from them. The quarterback position, JT Barrett, you know, he's limited in some ways. And I think that's really the matchup in this game that is going to be fascinating to watch is, you know, how does Ohio State manufacture points against a defense that's, you know, really been one of the three or four best in the country all year long.
And JT Barrett, they haven't brought him out all week. He had that collision with the cameraman, Bill Rabinowitz, but nobody's really sure what he does look like. He was limping, but that's about all anyone knows, right?
Right. He was supposed to be on a conference call on Monday, and he wasn't, and then he was not available yesterday. So it'll be a mystery. They say that he'll be ready, and that's their optimistic that he will be. But it's not just a matter of can he play, but can he play effectively? Can he run the ball the way that JT Barrett normally runs the ball to move the chains? If they don't have that aspect to the game, if he can't run the ball effectively, that's a big issue. And then the other, you know, corollary to that is, do you play Dwayne Haskins Jr., who obviously played very well against Michigan?
Redshirt freshman quarterback. He did well against Michigan.
He played great.
Yeah, it was interesting to watch. What can we expect from him, do you think, Dan Wilkin?
Well, I don't know. I haven't gotten to see him a whole lot, really, this
year.
So, you know, that's part of the great unknown. And, you know, a lot of teams this year have had issues at the quarterback position with injuries. Clemson lost a game earlier this year at Syracuse when they had to play a backup quarterback. That position is just so important in football and especially college football that your team kind of rises and falls with how that guy plays. And so if somebody's in there who doesn't have a lot of experience, it's just a crapshoot.
All right. Well, just prediction time, end of the segment. And Dan Wilkin, USA Today national college football writer, what do you predict for Saturday?
You know, I just have kind of been persuaded that this is Wisconsin's year. And, you know, I think they win the game fairly handily, to be honest. I just, you know, every time I try to doubt them, they prove me wrong. And, you know, Ohio State, as much respect as you have to have for their talent level, there's just been a lot of issues going on with them all year long, and it just hasn't looked as good as it is supposed to look. And, you know, and I think Wisconsin will really limit their offense, and I think they win comfortably.
Okay. Bill Rabinowitz?
You know, I hate doing this. <The B-rider.
laughs> I would hate it, too.
Yeah, we have to do it in the paper every week. Then I think Ohio State will win because I think they're just a better overall team. I think that the question at quarterback is a big one. Is JT going to be able to play and play effectively? On the other hand, you have Wisconsin quarterback Alex Hornibrook, who has made some great plays, some big plays, clutch plays for them, but he's also thrown 13 interceptions. They haven't played a defense like Ohio State's, with the possible exception of Michigan's. And I just think Ohio State has more overall talent than Wisconsin.
We'll see if it shows up. That's the question, right?
Right.
All right, Dan Wilkin, thank you for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
You got it. Thank you.
Dan Wilkin, USA Today national college football writer. Bill Rabinowitz of the Columbus Dispatch is going to stay with us. We're going to continue our conversation about the season as it was. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. We're talking about the OSU Buckeyes today. An up-and-down regular season led to a 10-2 record, and the Big Ten championship game for Ohio State is this Saturday. On paper, it was another successful season, but a tougher-than-expected season nonetheless. Inconsistent play plagued the Buckeyes and could cost them a berth in the college football playoffs, all things being equal. Quarterback JT Barrett faced his critics, but he kept the Buckeyes afloat when the chips were down a few times, that's for sure. Still with us is Ohio State football beat writer for the Columbus Dispatch, Bill Rabinowitz. Bill, thanks again for joining us.
Happy to be here, Ann.
So what did you think of Ohio State heading into this season? What were your expectations?
I knew that they were very experienced in spots and also very inexperienced in spots. I thought their talent level was probably as good as it's been. I expected them to be very, very good. I was mildly surprised at the Oklahoma loss and was shocked, like everyone else was, at the Iowa loss. To lose by 31 points, to give up 55 points.
What did you think of that? I mean, what?
I think sometimes, especially in college football, you're dealing with 18 to 22-year-olds, and yeah. things can snowball. And that's what happened. They started off, kind of took a shot to the jaw with JT Barrett throwing a pick six on the first play from scrimmage. They tied it up at 17. They looked to be in good shape. Then Nick Bosa gets a targeting penalty. He's ejected from the game. Iowa scores. There's an interception right before half. It's 31-17, and I think they just were stunned. And Iowa, to their credit, played great that day. That's the thing. You're not playing golf. You're not playing a course. You're playing other human beings. And sometimes those other human beings have a good day. And that's what happened that day.
And it said something about Ohio State that maybe they're not cut out for the championship playoff this year.
Well, that's certainly a black mark on their resume. There's no doubt about it, and that may be hard and impossible to overcome. We'll have to see how it plays out. But the thing about the playoff system is everything's relative.
Yeah.
Alabama's got the Auburn loss, and they don't have a signature win like Ohio State does. Ohio State has a huge win over Penn State. The Michigan State win, sorry, Ann.
That's okay.
You know, and even beating Michigan, which is not a great Michigan team, but it's still a decent Michigan team.
Better,
and then if
yeah.
they beat Wisconsin, the only undefeated team among the Power Five conferences, then that's a pretty strong resume. And that's mm-hmm. that's stronger than anything Alabama's got. But, you know, Alabama's still a really good team. And as Dan said, they kind of the eye test, they passed the eye test in a lot of ways. But Ohio State in 2015 was certainly one of the four best teams in the country. Then, you know, your Spartans beat them, and that was the end of Ohio State.
Yeah, Spartans have been a spoiler, but not this year. Listeners, if you have thoughts about the OSU Buckeyes football season, the regular season right now, and what are your predictions for Saturday against undefeated Wisconsin in the Big Ten Championship, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you could email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you have a question for Bill Rabinowitz of the Columbus Dispatch, you're welcome to shoot him those questions as well. You can, again, email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post the question or the comment there. J.K. Dobbins, I love that name, has racked up over 1,000 rushing yards this year as a true freshman. Did anyone expect that kind of output from him before the season?
No, because they thought Mike Weber would be the running back, but Mike Weber hurt his hamstring. And so J.K. Dobbins, who had really impressed them in the winter conditioning drills and in the spring ball, they didn't really have a lot of options, honestly.
Right.
And J.K. Dobbins missed almost his entire senior year of high school with an injury. So they weren't sure exactly what they were getting.
More unknowns than not.
Right. But from the very start, I remember the Indiana game and watching him going, oh, this
uh-huh.
guy's a player.
Uh-huh.
You can just tell. And he has it. And it's going to be interesting because Jonathan Taylor for Wisconsin is a freshman as well. And that's going to be a great matchup, seeing those two guys, not head-to-head, obviously, but, you know, those guys play on the same field.
The freshman talent's always interesting.
Yeah, it is. And Ohio State recruits at such a high level
yeah.
that the expectation is that they're not going to redshirt. They are going to play right away. That's the hope. Now, if you have a good enough team, then it's going to be hard for them to be a starter. But Ohio State's got a bunch of true freshmen. Chase Young, defensive end, who's kind of been buried on the depth chart with all the talent Ohio State has at that position. Jeffrey Okuda at cornerback is a guy who will probably start next year. So they have a ton of talent, but when you have that, you know, when Urban Meyer's been able to stack recruiting class on top of recruiting class, you do have to bide your time.
10-2, great record for any team, all things being equal, but the Buckeyes haven't been very consistent on either side of the ball this season. It's not just the defense or the offense. It's kind of both sides have been up and down. Right,
yep.
Right. A big win over Penn State 1 week, a blowout loss to unranked Iowa the next. And I'm wondering how much they have been working on that psychology.
Well, Urban Meyer was a psychology major.
That's
so
right.
I think there's always an
He's
element
always got
to that.
Yeah,
there's they play that a lot. I mean, that's a big deal to Iowa State, making sure that they're in the right frame
the game
of mind,
in the head,
motivation,
right?
And all that stuff. That's a huge part of their culture. Part of it is that, first of all, it's very, very difficult to go undefeated in college football. I mean, Wisconsin's the only team that's done it in Central Florida, and neither of their schedules has been anything like Ohio State's has played. So it's just really hard to do. And then, you know, Oklahoma, when Baker Mayfield played like the Heisman Trophy winner he's going to be against Ohio State. And then we talked about Iowa. So, you know, in the other games, the games that we talked about, Penn State, Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State's looked pretty good. And they, in that five-game stretch in October, starting in October, I think, where they played inferior competition, they really handled those teams. They didn't really struggle with those teams, which is also the mark of a good team.
A big bright spot was JT Barrett's return to form. What do you think of the season he's having? He's broke a ton of records. Single-handedly won the Penn State game, really, is what a lot of people think. Helped lead OSU past Michigan State and Michigan. But what about him?
JT, I think when time passes and people understand what they had with JT, will probably appreciate him more than sometimes they do in the moment. I think the quarterback, especially a veteran quarterback, and it seems like he's been here forever. I've joked with him that he's going to be the first Ohio State player to get a pension.
Yeah,
he's been here forever. So I think when you see somebody for that long, you see what you perceive to be the flaws in his game. And there's always the attraction of the next big thing, and that's Dwayne Haskins probably in this case. So there's always going to be that element. And I think that he's handled that very well. He understands it's the nature of the quarterback position. You get too much credit, too much blame. And the numbers speak for themselves, but also the testimony of his teammates and coaches and the way that they praise him for his leadership, for his even-temperedness. He's just a really solid guy. Guy's not going to panic when things get tough. And, you know, is he a flawed quarterback? Yeah, like pretty much
most
everybody
of them,
is.
Yeah.
I mean, there are things that are going to be huge questions for him to answer if he wants to play in the NFL. But in terms of being a college quarterback, I mean, look at his record and look at what he's done.
What are the huge questions when it comes to the NFL?
Well, I think it's largely arm strength.
Okay.
Decision-making, quick decision-making in the pocket. There are times that he's been tentative. He's got to prove the physical part of it in the NFL. Does he have the arm to make those tough throws and much tighter windows that you have in the NFL? So that will come in time.
Well, so what do you make of this week of them keeping him under wraps? I wonder about Haskins. Are they getting him ready?
Yeah, they're getting both guys ready. I mean, from a competitive standpoint, why would they tip their hand and say he's playing or not playing? It's better to keep Wisconsin guessing and make them prepare for two quarterbacks and not know what Ohio State's game plan is likely to be.
He's never – JT Barrett's never won a Big Ten championship as the starting quarterback.
Right.
And might not even start this Saturday anyway. What does that have to – I mean, are you worried – or not you worried, but might there be worry that it's a lot of pressure?
For Haskins?
Yeah, and for JT Barrett.
Yeah,
for that
well,
matter.
If Barrett can't play because of his injury, what can he do? I mean, I remember talking to him after the 2014 national championship, and I asked him, is this at all bittersweet for you because you're not playing? And he said, no. After the Oregon game. And he said, no, because, you know, I'm hurt. There's nothing I can do. I didn't do anything wrong. I'm just hurt. And I'm happy that we won it. So that's just the attitude he has. And if he can't play on Saturday, for example, he'll probably have the same attitude because it's not his fault that he got hurt, and he wants the team to win. So I'm sure there's a part of him that if he can't play, and I do think he will, but if he can't, there will be a bittersweet feeling. There just has to be. But he'll never say that publicly. He just won't.
What's the deal with the senior tackle?
It's just a ceremonial thing that they've done for generations where the last kind of official practice before kind of the bowl postseason stuff, they hit the tackling dummy, the sled, and they give little speeches about what the 4 years have meant to them at Ohio State. And it's just a, we're not invited. The media's not invited.
I was going to say,
it's
private.
No, I've never seen one. It's private. And that's, I think, part of what makes it special is that they – this is just among the team.
Because
these guys work harder than the average fan would have any clue. I mean, they just do. And people who think, oh, they're on full scholarship, it's an easy thing, they play football.
No, I don't think it's easy at
it's
all.
It's not. It is a grind. It is a full-time job on top of being a full-time student.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you are put through that kind of crucible, there is a closeness, a brotherhood, as they would say, among the team. And so those are those special moments that it's just them and they can talk about their feelings and talk about what their careers meant to them.
The guys who never play, who are always only there as punching bags for the season, what's it like for them?
Well,
do you ever talk to those guys?
No, they're not much. They don't usually bring those guys out. I think they understand their role. They must, because they understand that you need somebody to practice against.
Yeah.
And they're valuable. And the Ohio State starters always praise them and say that they couldn't do what they do on Saturdays without the scout team. And so those guys don't get any kind of recognition externally, but I think they do internally.
At something like the senior tackle.
Senior tackle and just
throughout the season.
In the team meeting rooms. I mean, the walk-ons and the backups, they are treated very well.
So how much of a run in the college football playoff, how much will that impact his legacy at Ohio State, I guess, JT Barrett?
If they make the playoff
and
they win a game, and, you know, obviously the winning two would cement it permanently. I mean, that would be the ultimate. The stench from 31-0 against Clemson lingers. If they make the playoff and they get beat like that again, that's not good.
And he's the one.
Well, it depends on how he plays. I mean, I don't personally think he played terribly against Clemson. I think it was a complete team effort.
Mm-hmm.
It was not
a
JT
complete
Barrett.
Team failure.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, this was not JT Barrett playing terribly. And this was the whole team playing terribly and JT not being able to kind of overcome that and lift them on his shoulders, which is hard. I mean, a quarterback is one of 11 guys in the field. It's not basketball. You take the ball and Michael, if you're Michael Jordan or LeBron James, you can just dominate the game. It's just, you're one of 11.
So we talked about JT Barrett. We talked about J.K. Dobbins. Who else do you think is critical on Saturday?
Well, their defensive line in particular, which is a very good, very deep defensive line. Nick Bosa, Tyquan Lewis, Sam Hubbard. I mean, you can rattle off the names. It's as deep a unit as I've ever seen on the college level. That's going to be huge. Wisconsin throws the ball some. That's not what they're known for. Denzel Ward, who I'm going to be writing about our game day cover, or either game day cover subject, has had a fantastic year at cornerback. He's not a guy who seeks publicity, so people don't know that much about him. But he's had a fantastic year. I think the linebackers who really did not play well against Iowa will have to play well this week. They have a different alignment now. Tough Portland's now playing middle linebacker, where he's been very good. Chris Willie's moved to the outside, where I think he's probably better. Jerome Baker is a talented guy on the other side. So, you know, the defense is going to be challenged, but I think that Wisconsin is not a particularly tough matchup if they could cover that tight end, which is, again, against Iowa. I keep saying that. Against Iowa is a problem.
What's the difference in terms of skill set between the middle and the outside linebacker?
Well, middle linebackers kind of stereotypically have been the bigger guys who handle the run between the tackles run, and linebackers have to do more, outside linebackers
running.
Have to do a little more in coverage, and it's more, a little speedier. The designations probably don't mean as much as they used to a generation ago, but that's kind of the stereotype.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about OSU football. If you have a question or comment for Bill Rabinowitz of the Columbus Dispatch, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. The Bucks go up against undefeated Wisconsin on Saturday for the Big Ten championship. It could seal the deal for the Buckeyes in the playoffs. It certainly will if the Wisconsin wins. If you have a question or comment, once again, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher, talking OSU football today. The OSU Buckeyes finished the regular season with a 10-2 record, beating Big Ten rivals Penn State, Michigan State, and Michigan along the way. They face undefeated Wisconsin in the Big Ten Championship on Saturday. That could seal the deal for either one of them, for whoever wins, for a berth in the playoffs. Off the field, questions about defensive coordinator Greg Schiano, whose shot at the head coaching job at Tennessee fell through after backlash over his time at Penn State under Jerry Sandusky. Still with us is Columbus Dispatch sports reporter Bill Rabinowitz. Bill, walk us through the Schiano fiasco with Tennessee. I mean, it was either they were completely unaware at Tennessee that there would be this kind of backlash.
Well, it's I think a very complicated story, and obviously I didn't cover it that closely, from a Tennessee perspective. But Tennessee is a program,
yeah.
Right? Tennessee is a program that is generally been very good, maybe not quite elite consistently. They've fallen on hard times. They fired their coach earlier this month. They were winless, I think, in the SEC. It's a very unsettled fan base, a very passionate fan base. And when word leaked on Sunday that they were going to hire Greg Schiano, there was a huge backlash, and the reason that some of them gave was the supposed ties of Schiano, who was a Penn State assistant in the early 90s, with Jerry Sandusky. And there was a unsealed deposition released last year, July of 2016, that said that Mike McQuarrie, who was kind of the star witness, said that he had heard from another assistant coach, Tom Bradley, that Bradley had said to him that he had heard an assistant, Greg Schiano, say that he saw something bad happen with Schiano, with Sandusky mm-hmm. and a boy.
In the showers. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was just one line in a deposition. There was no corroborating evidence. There was nothing else ever associating Schiano with Sandusky or knowledge of it or anything. But that was used, whether that was the actual reason or a smokescreen, for a lot of people at Tennessee to say, we don't want this guy. Schiano was the head coach at Rutgers. He had roughly a 500 record there, which actually at Rutgers is a very good record. He took them from being a horrible program to, at one point, number 6 in the country. He had a very successful tenure at Rutgers, then became the coach of Tampa Bay Bucks, didn't do well, got fired after 2 years. I think Tennessee, a lot of their fans just thought, we deserve somebody with a better resume, more exciting than Greg Schiano. And some of them used, and I think some of them certainly were sincere about the Penn State connection, such as it may have been. But I like a lot of them use that as at least Gene Smith, when I talked to him, seemed to think that was an excuse, basically, for them to not hire Schiano.
Well, I mean, do they? Is he a second tier?
Well,
would he be?
I mean, I think Greg Schiano, I mean, what he did at Rutgers was exceptional, given what Rutgers was and the challenges that winning at that school still, there's still a major challenge winning at Rutgers. So I think it was very successful for a Rutgers coach. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, when I was reading about him, he wouldn't win the Mr. Popularity contest.
Well, I mean, he doesn't have a real charismatic personality, at least in our limited dealings with him, with the media. But I can tell you, I've been, I don't know if surprised is the word, but I talked to Kerry Combs last night, the cornerbacks coach. Players have all been extremely complimentary about Greg Schiano. A former player, Joe Berger, tweeted something the other day that said, I was skeptical about him, and I couldn't have been more impressed with him. So he has won a lot of people over at Ohio State, people who may have been skeptical.
Has he changed his ways, maybe?
Or? Well, I think everyone changed. I mean, I hope anyone would change
matures
their ways.
Matures over time.
And I obviously didn't cover him at Rutgers right. or with the Tampa Bay Bucks. But, he's been perfectly pleasant in dealings with the media here. He's not a guy who I think he would rather be behind closed doors coaching his players than talking to the media. But that's probably 95% of coaches anyway.
I was going to say, yeah, give me one. I've never met one.
Right.
Well, except the ones that are really super ridiculously outspoken. It was interesting, even for gubernatorial candidates in the state of Tennessee opposed his hiring, and the fact that they would even get involved.
Right.
I'm not so sure that it would be much different in Ohio, frankly, although Ohio's got more going for it as far as teams go.
Well, maybe not in pro football.
But it's got more, you know, it's sure. not just Ohio State anymore. Right. There's other stuff going right. on here. At the end of the day, it was the fans that caused the deal to fall apart?
Yeah. I think there's no question that I think they were stunned. The administration at Tennessee was stunned by the backlash.
Well, that's what I wonder about. Why were they so they're stunned, and you think, well, those are just fans were just using that as an excuse.
Yeah, I can't read people's minds.
Yeah.
I know what Gene Smith thinks, and I know what a lot of other people think about. I think there were people who were generally concerned about any kind of connection with Penn State. I don't know that that's a majority.
Well, Tennessee has gone through its own sex harassment issue.
That's
it last year?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's there's a lot.
There's a lot of sensitivity around that.
Yeah.
So what's next for? Who's out there?
Well,
you never know.
I think what happened with Schiano is probably going to hurt their chances of getting the star, marquee coach that they're looking for, because who's going to want to walk into that situation right now? So Oklahoma State's Mike Gundy turned down the job yesterday, and I don't know who they're going to get, but they'll get somebody decent. It's a decent job, but this didn't help them.
Yeah. What about his future with Ohio State now, Schiano's?
Well, I think, for now he'll stay. For his sake, I hope that this hasn't kind of hurt his chances down the road. In some ways, it may have, I don't say helped them. I don't think I can say that. But I think there's been a backlash to the backlash in terms of getting people becoming sympathetic to Greg Schiano. So down the road, maybe that gives him another chance. But I think he's certainly worthy of being a head coach again. There's no question about that.
But the question is, how much good of a memory has this tainted him?
Well, I think, again, the track record at Rutgers and the fact that everyone who has investigated this Sandusky matter has come away saying there was nothing to it. Penn State, a trustee from Penn State, released a statement saying that he had nothing to do with it. I think that's not going to be an issue.
How do they know?
Well, you can't prove a negative.
Right.
So that's, is it possible that he saw what Mike McQuarrie claimed? I guess it is. I wasn't there. I'm not going to judge that. All I know is that the people there, the district attorney in Philadelphia, all these people who you would think would have said, if there's something there, we're going to investigate this to the maximum level we can, didn't, because they did not find it credible.
Let's talk about Urban Meyer. Next season marks his 7th at OSU, and I was surprised that's the longest he's ever been anywhere at one school.
Right.
6 years at OSU, 6 years at Florida, 2 at Utah, 2 at Bowling Green. What do you think the chances are that he'll leave Ohio State, or do you think he'll settle here?
I don't think he'll coach anywhere else.
Okay.
I think the question for
he'll end
him
his career here.
Is how long does he want to coach? I mean, he is an extremely intense person. It is an extremely intense job.
So is Florida.
I think, yes, it is. And then you saw what happened to Florida.
Yeah.
I mean, do I think he'll be here in 10 years? No. I mean, 5 years, I think that there is an expiration date on all coaches. Whether that's next year, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, I have no idea. But I'll be surprised if he's here in another 7 years, put it that way.
An expiration date on all coaches. It didn't used to be that way, did it?
No, it didn't. But I think the money, the pressure, the exposure, everything is just so over the top now that, Twitter didn't exist 10 years ago. All these things where people can just create controversy, and everything it can be so vitriolic right now. And it's hard. It's like everything is just kind of in dog years, It's just, things are so intense. So I don't know how, Woody Hayes was here for 27 years or something like that.
And yeah.
I think those days are long gone.
How much does Urban Meyer make base pay?
A lot. I mean, I think it's 6 or 7. I know this, but I just can't draw in a blank. I think it's 6 or 7 million a year.
Crazy.
Yeah.
He's 71-8 at Ohio State. That's what I'm told.
I don't think it's, yeah, maybe it is. Yeah, it's a ridiculous
record. It is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Is that him?
Well, it's partly him. It's partly the fact that Ohio State is the only program in the country that has never had an extended dip in the last 50 years or so. Every other program has gone through multiple years of being down. Ohio State has never done that. There have been the odd bad year, but not for long. And a lot of that's because Ohio is a fairly populous state, and it's got great football, great high school football. So you have a base. You have a recruiting base.
That, of dreamers out there.
Right.
Who would,
and Ohio State is the only school in the country that has a populous state all to itself, for the most part. I mean, Cincinnati.
Right.
But Ohio State beats Cincinnati in the recruiting game. Let's not kid
ourselves. Sure, sure.
Every other state, Florida has multiple schools, Texas, multiple schools, California, multiple schools, Georgia, multiple schools.
Big schools, right.
Right. And so Ohio State has that advantage, and Ohio State puts resources into it. So it's important to Ohio State to be good at football every year, and they are. So has Urban Meyer, you know, raised the level a little bit? Yeah, but Jim Tressel was highly successful too.
Right, he was. I was always surprised that they were able to keep up the level of recruiting after the debacle over the tattoos and the Tressel covering up and that whole thing.
That's because Urban Meyer is the other thing about him is he's a fantastic recruiter. He is hands-on. Most head coaches kind of view it as a necessary evil. Urban Meyer actually likes it.
Necessary evil?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I don't know that coaches love having their lives dictated to by 16, 17-year-olds that
they have to constantly
be in contact with and try to get them to come to their school. Urban Meyer really enjoys the recruiting part of it. That's one of the things that makes him Urban Meyer.
He likes working with those young guys and
He's such a competitive guy that I think part of it is just the competition of getting the guys. Yeah, you want to win when they're here, but part of it is just, you know, getting the guys. That's part of the competition.
And he likes that. That's interesting. You know, let's talk. So we don't know where he's going. We don't know when he's going. But you're saying in 7 years he probably won't be here.
You know,
you think he'll
retire?
Do you think he could go pro?
Yeah, I think. I mean, I think he could.
Would he? Since he does like that.
I doubt it. I mean, one of the things that is appealing to an Urban Meyer or somebody like him in college is that you can stack your roster. I mean, if you can get a guy. In the NFL, you get one out of 32 guys. And parity is the way it is. Urban Meyer going 8-8, it's hard for me to imagine him, as competitive as he is, being able to deal with that.
Having to deal with the personalities and the...
Yeah, that's the other thing.
And being hamstrung.
It's a lot easier to impose your will on college-age kids as opposed to grown men.
Yeah. What do you make of this story about a cameraman injuring JT Barrett last Saturday? Obviously, Urban Meyer wasn't happy, but whatever. I mean, I couldn't find any good, clear video of it. Did you see what happened?
No, nobody has yet. TMZ has this video.
No, it's stupid.
It's
I saw
before
that.
And after, and there's a fan reaction, but
nobody's
seen it.
No one's seen it.
It's bizarre because we came into the post-game press conference expecting Urban Meyer to be ecstatic. He's got a backup quarterback who rallies the team to win.
Yeah.
And all he can think about is this cameraman.
Was it a video cameraman?
I think it was a regular. I don't know.
That's what I know.
Nobody knows. I mean, I don't know. But it was just the most bizarre thing because we in the media didn't know what he was talking about at first. Because he starts talking about, I'm so mad at myself and this cameraman. And we're like, what? What is he? You know, we had no idea. We thought JT Barrett was injured only in the third quarter. We didn't know there was something that precipitated it at the start of the game. So that was a very strange thing.
And we don't know the extent of the injuries. It was his leg.
No, and JT Barrett, Rob Baller and I, our columnist, and I kind of got him in the hallway for a few minutes by ourselves. And he said this was actually an injury that he first sustained against Indiana.
Okay.
So he's kind of played with this, and he could kind of hyperextend it or extend it and then snap it back into place. I mean, I don't know exactly what he was.
The knee. Anyway,
the knee.
Right.
But I guess what happened when he got bumped with the camera, it started swelling. And so when the third quarter injury happened, it had already swollen to the point where he couldn't kind of snap it back into place. And that's why he couldn't keep playing.
Okay. So this happened before.
This was before they took their first series, the opening kickoff and when Michigan had the ball for their first series. On the sideline, as JT's warming up, somebody bumped him with a camera.
Okay.
Whether it was intentional or accidental, nobody seems to know. But that, and he kind of, you could see him in that TMZ video kind of limping around a little bit, but he was obviously able to play and play well enough that people didn't suspect anything until the third quarter injury happened. Very strange.
All right. So this kind of a thing, though, Urban Meyer's irritated, but it did show some serious talent in the offing there.
Yeah, Dwayne Haskins, we knew about his arm. We've seen his arm enough. But to go in there and play with the poise that he did to make those throws, the one throw to Austin Mack on his first drive was just an incredible
throw.
And
it was
a must,
great catch. Too.
Yeah, right, it was third and 13. Well, it was still third quarter. They had time. But, but you know, you don't want to squander opportunities. And,
right.
And a perfect pass. And Austin Mack made a terrific catch getting hit. And Haskins played like a veteran. And that's quite a testament to him playing that well in that situation.
All right, so when we're talking about this Big Ten championship game on Saturday, we have a few minutes left. What are you going to be looking for going forward? What do you do as a, you know, covering your beat? What are you looking for?
Well, what I do, honestly, on Saturday is I'll be writing
furiously,
yes, and the Ohio State win story and the Ohio State lose story, and because we're on deadline, it's people want my job until they have to do it on Saturday.
Yeah, I hear you.
And so, but you know, so I'll do what I can to prepare, and then I'll really be watching JT Barrett if he plays, and you know, how effective is he, and then just covering the game, and as you said, writing furiously. You know, I'll probably write 3,000 words for maybe 700 get in print.
And then the playoffs, if they make it, how do those work?
Yeah, they would be, there are four teams in it, and the semifinals are either the Rose Bowl or the Sugar Bowl. People's best guess is they would go to the Sugar Bowl if they're in it. And if they win that, then they would go play in the championship game.
And it's just one game?
Yeah, the championship. It's, yeah, start the semifinals or the Rose and the Sugar Bowl, uh-huh. And then there's the championship game.
How do you like it, having a champion, the playoff the way it is now?
I think it's great. I think that having four teams in some ways is the perfect number. I understand, you know, a lot of people want eight.
March Madness kind of a thing,
right.
Yeah.
But if it's eight, then the very top teams, the Alabamas and maybe the Ohio States, the expectation is that if you're not in the playoff, it's a bad year. And you could definitely lose twice and be one of the top eight teams. With this, you have so much debate. And this is great that you have this debate. Is it Alabama? Is it Ohio State? If this, if that, all these things, it's great debate. And so I have no problem with it being four teams. And the other factor is, you know, you're adding another, you're making it a 15-game season, I think it is, or 16. I've lost count. It's a long season. And
tell that to a hockey player.
Yeah, well, yeah, that is, you're right. The Blue Jackets, and even, you know,
seriously.
Yeah, that's a long season. You're right about that. I can see the point.
Well, Bill Rabinowitz, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome, man. Always nice to be with you.
Bill Rabinowitz is an Ohio State football beat writer for the Columbus Dispatch. The Ohio State Buckeyes face off against undefeated Wisconsin for the Big Ten Championship on Saturday. We'll have a link to the times on our website at WOSU.org. Thanks to the All Sides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, assistant producer Shia Lanat, All Sides interns Kyle McKinnon, who produced this show, Courtney Gilbert, Dan Posniak, and Martin Coleman, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Thanks again for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.